We are the Montana Logging and Ballet Company, an improbable name for a group of four men who do comedy and original music and political satire. We formed at Rocky Mountain College in Billings, Montana, a small United Methodist-related church college. And despite the four of us coming from there, it is now a very fine institution and well-regarded. We have Tim Holmes is a sculptor. Steve Garnes Holmes is a United Methodist pastor in Concord, New Hampshire. Bob Fitzgerald and Rusty Harper both work for Rocky Mountain College now in Montana.
Okay, who's speaking there?
That's Rusty.
Rusty. Hey, Rusty. All right. Rusty, you'll need to identify yourself as you respond to this, but share with us a little bit about your own pilgrimage. Rocky Mountain College, but how did you fall into this rather unusual pilgrimage?
I'm Rusty Harper, and I fell into this unusual group because Bob Fitzgerald, who formed the group, picked me. I was the only person in the choir at Rocky who owned an instrument. I had a guitar, who hadn't already been in the group with Fitz. We got together and had such a great time singing in Yellowstone Park that we've been together almost ever since.
And how long is that?
And that is 40 years now.
He's a lot older than he looks.
I don't know. I look pretty old. In terms of our pilgrimage, we went from that many years ago being part of the folk music era. When we added the two brothers singing, we found them again at Rocky Mountain College. We became a group that did more humor and more political satire. And Steve now writes all of our own music. So it's all original. Some of it's a cappella, and some of it isn't. We have electric piano and electric bass and acoustic 6-string and 12-string guitar and banjo.
Give me an example of what you try to accomplish through either your music, the satire. In other words, you have an audience, and when the program is over, activity is over, what do you really hope that happened there to those folks?
Well, we just sang last night for the Kansas area, Kansas West and Kansas East conferences. They are installing their new bishop, Scott Jones, and we got to sing for them, a wonderful event. We use music to make people feel good, comedy to get them to laugh, political satire to get us to laugh together about some of the things that are wrong with our country. And end with a message of hope, because people are just hungry for hope. They want to hear some good news, and we do it in a way that people can hear, even if they're not United Methodist, even if they're not Christian, they can understand that we each have something that we can do. But the humor is the key. We get us to laugh at ourselves first, and then we can hear, oh yes, there is something I can do.
Give me an example.
An example is that one of the things that we face as United Methodists right now is that we are so divided over so many issues. Homosexuality is, of course, the biggest one, but there are the issues of the Iraq War and of abortion. The liberal versus conservative sides of the church are sometimes almost at war. And so we get us to laugh about ourselves. In fact, Steve had written a song about the General Conference. Can you do part of that for us, Steve?
Let's see. Christians have gathered, and we always will, to listen and seek and to know God's will. So the Baptists all pray, the Adventists just hope. The Catholics say, yes, sir, and follow the Pope. The Quakers sit silent and follow the light, but the Methodists all get together and fight.
There we go.
There's the report from General Conference.
Okay. Do you want to shift to one of the other guys? And identify yourself before you start.
My name's Bob Fitzgerald, and I'm the old statesman of the group. And I've been singing with Rusty for some 40 years and with Steve and Tim, the brothers, for 30 years. So the four of us have well over 100 years together singing, and that's pretty sad, actually. But we did start at Rocky Mountain College when I was a senior and Rusty was a freshman, and we did pick him because he could play a bar F chord, and we thought that was pretty special at the time. So we've been off and probably sung in most every state in the country, and done lots of things, lots of different venues, but we really like singing for the Methodists, and we've done, I think, the Global Gathering with Archbishop Desmond Tutu, and I think it was 1988 in Louisville, which was a special highlight, and because of that relationship, we invited him to Montana, and we actually did a fundraiser for him in D.C., Washington, D.C., and then invited him to Montana, where he came in 1991, and we had a glorious evening. 4,000 people showed up, and everybody gave money. All the colleges, the tribal colleges and everything, gave money to help his work in South Africa to educate the brightest and the best of the South Africans that had been shut out of the educational system. So we raised $1 million that night, and it was quite fun. And he has written the liner notes on our first album, which we did with the L.A. Philharmonic. And so we cut an album out there with the producer Mundell Lowe, who many people know about, and put that album out in 1991, and then did another one after that. So we have two albums out now, and then we were on National Public Radio for 3 years. People may have heard us if they weren't in church, because the only time we were on was Sunday morning. So we have a couple of tapes and CDs there, and of course, if anybody wants to contact the Montana Logging and Ballet Company, they can always go to MLABC.org if they want to know more about our performing schedule and that sort of thing.
Give me an example of what you would do at NPR, of course, which would be a different than a United Methodist audience, because it not only is the medium different, but the audience different. Give me an example of the type of thing you would address there.
Well, we have a lot of fun with the politicians, the people that tell us how to live and try to guide us. So we try and say the emperor has no clothes, basically, and I would turn that over to my buddy Steve, who might have an idea about
Let's
that.
Let's see, who might have an idea.
Yeah, some of the satire we've done over the years. But we just mostly pick on the people that are in charge.
One thing that we're sort of known for, this is Tim. We have developed a penchant for taking the news of the day and turning it into the concert that we do that night. And we've developed a pretty quick way of reading the paper and finding out where the weak spots are, who's sticking their head up, who really deserves to be knocked down a few pegs. NPR, the radio spots, were a really good venue for us because we're used to working on quick notice. An event would happen, and we would write a bit about that event, and then a couple of days later, it would be recorded and sent to NPR. That's one thing that I think very few groups have been doing.
An example of an NPR sort of editorial.
Who's speaking there?
This is Rusty. An example of an NPR sort of editorial was a song that we did back when Kansas Board of Education passed creationism and put that into the schools. And as good United Methodists, we, of course, needed to take a little umbrage at that. We could just start how that song goes. We were in Kansas last night, and so we dusted off the song, since apparently they're heading in that direction again.
I hear Darwin got expelled from school.
Oh, that's bad.
I can't hear with my earphones on.
Oh.
I hear Darwin got expelled from school. I'm glad to see him go. I'm happy that he's gone, 'cause now there's less I have to know.
So learning's going backward, what a boon for humankind. With Darwin out, Copernicus cannot be far behind. Once evolution's gone, they'll scuttle relativity, 'cause they want absolutes. Besides, it's just a theory.
Johnny, can you tell me something about Charles Darwin?
No, Mr. Kneffelkamp.
Very good.
Ah.
And it goes on like that, yes.
Great, great. Well, you know, you guys have been at this a long time. To what do you attribute your staying power in doing this kind of thing?
This is
you
Steve.
Just enjoy each other's company. Now, answer this in a way that you don't. They don't hear my question, so you'll have to answer this in a way that.
It's amazing that we've lasted together as a group for 31 years, given the fact that all of us are equally insane. And sometimes we're competing to be, you know, sort of the silliest one in the group. But actually, part of it is a shared vision that we see a lot of what's important in the world in the same way. And part of it is that there are things that, in a sense, we don't share. We have differences, and we discover that we need each other. And the show is not the same without one of us. We need each other's presence, and we need each other's gifts, and we need each other's particular place and perspective in the world. And what it's come down to, really, is that after 31 years of performing together, what our performances boil down to is that we like each other, and we're darn good friends. And a lot of what we do with the audience is just share what friendship is like, what it's like to be able to be close together and have fun together and trust each other and take some risks together. And if we can do that with them and include that in them, then that's part of what we've accomplished that we like. And it feeds us. We like being together.
I believe Rusty May or one of you said that Steve does, haven't heard from Steve yet, I don't think. Steve is doing a lot of the writing for you. I think I heard that correctly. Steve, identify yourself and say how, in terms of the creative planning behind some of what you're doing as a group, how has that changed through the years?
I'm Steve Garnes Holmes. I'm the writer, the composer of the group, and it's a particular love of mine. In fact, I'm a local United Methodist pastor and write a lot of music for our worship. Sometimes they overlap. Sometimes I will write a song for worship and then like the tune so much that I'll steal it from myself and add some words about energy policy and turn it into a little social satire. Or the other way around, I'll write a song about traffic or something and then afterwards think, now that we could use that tune, and I'll put the words of a psalm to it, and it works pretty well in worship. And so they've overlapped a lot over the years. It's kind of a fun project.
One thing is that Steve has written some tunes that are in the Methodist Book of Worship that people are probably familiar with.
His most famous is probably the one that begins, Spirit of God, bright wind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Spirit of God has kind of taken off. It's sort of had a life of its own. It's kind of fun. It's in the Faith We Sing. And I've got a few pieces in the music section of the Book of Worship and some other miscellaneous places.
Well, tell me, Steve, about your worship service. I could imagine your worship service as you as the pastor would be a little different than what I might find in the run-of-the-mill United Methodist Church. Is that true?
You know, sometimes people will come up after a performance and say, are you really a United Methodist pastor? And I'll say, yeah, don't I look like one? And they'll kind of have to puzzle over that because they imagine that my worship services are sort of a three-ring circus and a lot of comedy and whatever. They're actually, they look fairly much like worship services, although I really do like to include a lot of music and drama, but I also like to include the congregation. It's important to me that worship is not a performance and that we are all really performing for God in worship. But I like to write music, in fact, that involves the congregation in real easy, accessible ways and gets them really leading their own worship. And that's probably something that's most important to me in designing worship, that it really engaged the congregation together in offering up the gifts that they have, which is very similar to what we like to do in our performance, in the sense of stirring up that spirit in people and giving them a sense that God is at work in them, and they need to open up the channels and let that happen.
Tell us where your church is and describe the congregation.
I am a pastor with my wife. We're co-pastors at Bow Mills United Methodist Church, which is a church just right outside of Concord, New Hampshire. Little tiny church with a little over 100 in worship on Sundays. And it's an interesting group of people.
very loving, very typical kind of small church with no clue about this second life that I live out in the rest of the world. Every once in a while I tell them, yeah, well, I was off in Seattle or Chicago or Salina, Kansas for a concert for something, and they look at me kind of like, well, it's nice to have you back on the planet. And they let me do that. They let me wander off and have this other life.
I'd like for you to share a bit more, too, about the whole area of satire, because as a writer myself, as a journalist all these years, I know that that is a very difficult kind of thing to do. At least I found it to be, and you always have to, as a journalist, be very careful. But tell me about how satire works for you as a writer and you all as performers. How does that work, and what are the problems, and what are the opportunities there?
Satire is an interesting medium to be working in. You know, it's interesting. A lot of what we do essentially are parables. But some people think that a parable is a short story that tells us, that makes a point. But not really. The word parable comes from the same word as parallel, and it means alongside. A parable is really a story that's designed to give you a different perspective. And satire is that same kind of thing. One of the things that we've discovered is how difficult satire is among people who are not upset or worried or troubled about anything. Generally, our humor comes from tensions within us. And so what we found is that satire is most successful when we really do hit a nerve. And very much like Jesus' parables and Jesus' teaching, a lot of what we're doing is sort of sinking beneath the accepted party line, beneath the conventional wisdom, and really starting to touch what it is that people are really thinking without knowing that that's what they're thinking. And so at the same time that there's this kind of gasp of ridiculousness at what we're doing, there's also a gasp of recognition, so that at the same time people are saying, that's really absurd, and it's also true. And satire is that fine line of being both. And you can do satire in a way that's not truthful or not respectful, and it's funny, but it's of no use. And you can say things that are true, but that just bore people or scare them or don't help them to get closer to that truth. Satire is a way of sort of marrying truth and ridiculousness. And it's a fine line. It's a challenge, but it's pretty fun when it works.
Tim, given the fact that two of you are brothers, you obviously shared the same home and the same early years. What was there about your home life, your parents, your family life, whatever, that kind of formed you and Steve? What's that all about?
Well, Steve,
identify yourself to me.
This is Tim talking. My brother Steve didn't mention that he's the sixth generation of Methodist pastors in our family, and so we have a long line of working in the church, both through our mother's and father's side. So the work of the church, the spiritual direction, is part of something that we grew up with our whole lives. Myself, I'm a sculptor, and I started sculpting when I was 11 years old. The calling that I think each one of us has to do with the talents, the gifts that we are given by God, that we are responsible to share and to try to get in touch with the most the highest parts of ourselves, and to influence the community around us with those gifts. And so, for the most part, all of us have full-time jobs outside of the group, and I make my living as a sculptor. I do things in my sculpture work that are very similar to what this group does. I try to lift up issues, to try to introduce perspectives that are unusual, to get beneath the party line, as Steve says, the conventional way of thinking, to get people to wrestle with issues that might lie beneath their conscious, everyday kind of discourse. And
give me an example.
An example, I did a sculpture that was presented
at the United Methodist Global Gathering to Archbishop Tutu called, the sculpture's called I Shot an Angel by Mistake. And it's a depiction of a man who is leaning over this prone figure of an angel, probably dead on the ground. And the man has a rifle in his hand, and he is filled with remorse. And to me, this is a moment out of my life that I have lived many times when I have wished that I could roll time back just 10 seconds because I've made a horrible mistake and I've hurt somebody I didn't mean to hurt. And we do that as individuals, we do it as a community, we do it as a nation. And the reason I bring this image up is to encourage people to think about the ways that we kind of act impulsively without thinking about how it's going to affect somebody else before the instance.
You know, Tim, when I think about our growing up together and something that we have in common that I think has prepared us for what we do now, part of it is the high level of acceptance that was in our family. We were surrounded with a pretty clear vision of what our parents thought about the world, but there was no sense that we were supposed to think that way. We were definitely supposed to think. We were definitely supposed to examine and question. But it was the process of thinking that through and evaluating and questioning and critical thinking that was that we were encouraged in. It was the process, not the result. And I think that freedom to explore and to question really was at the root of certainly a lot of my spiritual thinking and my religious upbringing and my political outlook and a lot of different ways that I approach life, that it's the process of coming to a truth that's within me and not just saying, well, this is what I've been told to believe, so I need to believe that. Now, that led me in my early adulthood to do what I think we all do to some extent, and I think it's an important part of the faith journey, and that was what felt at the time like rejecting certain parts of the Christian faith. For me in particular, it was when I was in seminary, and it was the idea of the Trinity, and I thought, why should there be three? Why not seven? Why do these guys just get to say, you know, well, there's three? And I thought, that's a bunch of malarkey. But the tradition sort of hung around. There were these centuries of people who kept talking about this notion of a triune God, that somehow God was three-dimensional. And although it didn't make sense to me, I knew I had to either wrestle with it and come to some kind of truth or admit that I was afraid of it. Those are my only two options, either wrestle with it or chicken out. And in wrestling with it, I came to understand the Trinity in a deeper way.
Bob, these other guys have, I see, United Methodist background and Isle of Scutum theology and so forth. Your background is business. How did you fit into this whole thing?
Well, actually...
Identify yourself for me.
Yeah, this is Bob Fitzgerald. And actually, I got into this. I grew up in the United Church of Christ background and went through all the church camps and that sort of stuff and ended up being state president of my youth group. And so I come from a theology that's similar to these three Methodist guys. I've since gone over to become a Methodist. So I sing in the Methodist choir in Helena tomorrow. Three of us will be in the church choir tomorrow. But basically, my dad was a very good salesman, and I kind of followed in his footsteps, and I could sell anything. And these guys, I think, in the group are pretty talented guys. They let me sing with them, but I can manage, and I can sell, and I can create some excitement and some spizzarinctum. And having gone through the UCC church and then gone on to direct UCC church camps, senior high youth groups for 25 years in Methodist camps after that, we all have found out that our theology sort of commingles, and we're all pretty much thinking the same way on a lot of these issues. And as Steve said, of course, we don't always agree, and that gives us the tension and the creative tension that allows us to come up with some oddly informative and entertaining answers to some of the questions in life. But I went to Rocky Mountain College, and there I met a choir director who literally changed my life. I had this 10-cent voice, a very small voice, and I took voice there for 4 years. And he said, you know, Fitz, you could go on and do something singing. So I drafted Rusty, who was only a freshman and was not that bright at the time, and he went off with me. And then 10 years later, we got Steve and Tim in the group, and then we started doing the creative satire and that sort of stuff, and word of mouth has just gone from that point on. And when we met Archbishop Tutu, I was able to make a connection with his staff and decided, gee, wouldn't it be fun to bring him to Montana? And we did, and since then we've had a kind of a long-standing relationship with his work and he and his family, and it's been wonderful. So it's been sort of a circuitous, odd journey to get to us to point, but I was thinking last night, you know, we've been together 40 years, never been in a car wreck or a plane wreck, and we're still singing and still healthy, and we'll probably do it for a few more years until we get booed off the stage.
Well, say something about the scope and the frequency of your bookings.
We do about 15 to 20 shows a year when we every year for the last, you know, 30 years, and it's just mainly word of mouth. People can contact me at fitzer@bresnan.net if they want to book the group, or they can go to mlabc.org, or they can call Bob Fitzgerald in Helena, Montana, and get a hold of us. But we love to perform for the Methodists all over the country. We've done lots of the state conferences through the years. And, of course, I don't know where we've performed so many. It's been so many years now.
Rusty, why don't we close off with you? And you mentioned, I think you mentioned a little earlier, about the whole thing about hope. We've talked about satire and humor and so forth. What is there in our culture right now that makes people respond to your message, and what are you saying about hope? Identify yourself.
This is Rusty. Wherever we go, we find that there's often a sense of despair because the nation is becoming so polarized. We're not just red states and blue states in election year, but we're divided over so many issues, and we're divided by religion and by politics and by gender and by race. And we find that people are hungry for some hope. When we invited Archbishop Desmond Tutu to Montana, this was before apartheid had fallen. This was before Nelson Mandela had been released from jail. And the thing that struck us about him was that he was such a hopeful man. And we said, how is it that you can be hopeful when everybody here knows there's going to be enormous bloodshed in your country? And he said, I have hope because I know who holds the future. He said, God does not call me to save my nation. God simply calls me to do my part. And ever since then, we have tried to bring that same kind of message of saying, God doesn't call us to save the world or the country, but does call us each to do our own part. And that if we can do that together, then God can make wonderful things happen that we can't even imagine.
Very good. Now, have I missed a gap in kind of your personal evolution or the group that you'd, any of you want to add before we close off? And then if you had something you wanted to do, you've already given some great illustrations in terms of the music, but if you want to have one kind of final sign-off thing, that would be great.
Yeah, I'll just say that before we go, this is Bob again, Bob Fitzgerald, that we consider ourselves a nudge group. We just try and nudge the issue forward a little bit in our time, in our space, you know, in our place, just nudge it forward. But we do have one little closing thing we'd like to do for you.
This is Rusty, and we'd like to do just one little ad for the group. You can put this in whenever we're going to be appearing near you. Are you tired of entertainment that is boring?
Duh.
And repetitious?
Duh.
Are you worried that clergy salaries are falling below the level of unskilled workers?
Duh.
Or politicians?
Duh.
Well, tonight, drop everything and run on down to hear the Montana
Yeehaw!
Logging and ballet
oh.
company.
Ding dong. Oh, hello. Come in.
And bring your friend.
No.
Tom, I think...
Hey, you guys are great. And you've obviously got something going because you wouldn't have been together this long. And every time I've heard you, I've been blessed by you and challenged by you and provoked by you. You do a great job.
Well, thanks. Tom, thanks for doing this.
Yeah, glad to do it.
It's been a pleasure.
It's fun.
Take care.